ladies and gentlemen, the Lord of America.
Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules. And at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. Welcome back to another edition of BOA The Revival. And I think we're going to have a really fun show tonight. It's been a while since we got into the world of UFOs. And really, that's where I cut my teeth in the paranormal long, long ago. So I'm really interested in tonight's guest and his work. He's doing some fantastic work. He's Tanner Boyle. You've probably heard of him. He's kind of he's been around a lot lately. He's kind of burst into the scene the last like year or two, and he's been on a lot of shows fairly recently. He was on Steve Berg's show just a few weeks ago, and he's getting a lot of attention for his fantastic writing over at Tanner Boyle is Spooked, and you can find that at tannerfboyle.substack.com. And let me spell that one for you: Tanner, T-A-N-N-E-R-F. BOYLE.substack.com. And he, well, we're going to get into this, but he explores a lot of stuff that we love here on Banal of America, historic, quirky UFO cases, and what may really have been going on there, if not Little Green Men. So that's what we're going to get into. So welcome to the show, Tanner. I'm really looking forward to talking to you. I'm a big fan of your stuff, so I think it's going to be a fun conversation.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me on. Thanks for having me.
Now, I have a question for you to start this program. I may be the first person who's ever asked you this. And since I first heard of you like about a year or so ago.
Oh, I know what this question's going to be.
I don't know.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, we'll see. All right, we'll see. Is Tanner Boyle your real name?
Yeah, it's not a Bad News Bears reference. My parents had no idea.
All right. Because, yeah, I've been dying to ask you that, man. Because, like, I've been like, Tanner Boyle, where have I heard that name before? And I'm like, oh, the surly little bastard on Bad News Bears. I fucking love that kid. And I'm like, right. I wonder if this is some kind of homage. But it is not an homage to Tanner Boyle from Bad News Bears.
I don't know if I'd want a homage the bad mouth shortstop who, you know, says things that I would never say.
Yeah, it's almost like my character. I'm like, oh, this is the wild. So, all right. Well, now that I can put that to bed finally after all these months, I should have just asked you like in private, but then I'm like, oh wait, he's coming on the show. We'll ask him that. Have you been asked this before? You must have gotten this plenty over the course.
Oh yeah, a lot. Well, I mean, I liked baseball growing up, so I feel like just the people I was around kind of like knew the Bad News Bears, and then it was like, wait, do your parents know that? And the answer is no. I'm actually named after a character on a soap opera.
Oh wow.
And Boyle's just, you know,
your name. Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, as we start out every Banal of America show, you know, with a new guest, the bio, the background, who is Tanner Boyle? How did you get mixed up in all this? And, you know, take us sort of your journey, not just, all right, you have an interest. There's lots of people that have an interest. Then to decide I'm going to put myself out there and write about this stuff. So take us on that journey.
Right. So I would say I was exposed to the UFO world, the Fortean world pretty early on, just like wandering around my local library and seeing that section. And it's like, you know, in fourth grade reading like Richard Belzer and Jim Mars, because the section back then was very small. I assume now it would be bigger. But I've sort of always had that interest, and I've gone back and forth with it, but it's always kind of in the background. I wound up writing a book from my time in college about Charles Fort's influence on science fiction.
Right, yeah.
And once I got into that, it just kind of ballooned out into being like fully into like the fringe areas again. And I would say my current line of thinking is sort of influenced by like Mark Pilkington's Mirage Men or Martin Cannon's The Controllers, things that I kind of wish I had come across earlier, but
yeah.
It's been like a recent development. I feel like both of those things kind of expand how you think about the UFO topic, maybe even the paranormal in general, to a lesser extent. But yeah, that's kind of how I got to where I am today.
There you go. Yeah,
it's a very normal progression.
Yeah, that's one of the more normal ones I've heard for sure. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty much kind of in keeping with my sort of journey, I guess you could say. Especially Jim Mars, he was like, he got me started on all this. So.
Oh right.
Yeah, he's my main man there. He's God rest his soul, Jim Mars. I wish he was around today. The shit he would be saying and seeing. It's like, dude, you died like 4 or 5 years way too early, obviously. Longer than that, whatever. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, damn, dude, Right. Things got crazy after you died. Kind of like the same with Stan, almost the same with Stan Friedman, too. It's like, Stan, shit, everything went shithouse after you died. What happened?
The cosmic Watergate is not occurring as he said it would.
Certainly not.
Which Jim Mars book was the one that got you started?
Rule by Secrecy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I picked it up in like late 2003, and then I immediately picked up Alien. I loved it, read it cover to cover. Then I got Alien Agenda, like from the same bookstore. I just went back and bought Alien Agenda. That was back when he only had 3 books, so it was like
very
early Jim Mars.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the 3 books I would have had for Crossfire, Rule by Secrecy, and Alien Agenda.
Alien Agenda, yeah.
And obviously Alien Agenda is the one that struck the biggest chord with me, but super interesting guy. I find myself thinking about that book a lot because I think I've almost underestimated how formative it was, but that was the book I read, and then I was like, oh, I'm all in.
Yeah. Well, you know what really kind of had a similar effect on me? I don't know, Gods of Eden. Have you ever read Gods of Eden?
I actually haven't, but I have it behind my head back there.
It's tremendous.
On the to-do list.
Yeah, it's tremendous. I tried to track that guy down, but he just wrote the book and fucking got out of the scene. And it was like, wow, dude, this book is like, it's like Alien Agenda, but it's even more sort of this sweeping span of fucking human history from prehistoric era up to whenever the book was published, and all sort of interweaving the alien influence. It's like an ancient alien, Gods of Eden. It's like an ancient alien book that takes you through all human history and paints it under the... It's wild. It's really like...
I'll have to put that higher up in queue based on your recommendation.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I think, talk to any of these old heads. They'll agree with me. Gods of Eden's like a really lost classic. So what I find interesting about you and your work is I think we share kind of similar points of view on a lot of this stuff. We're fairly skeptical at this point. As to sort of the alien, you know, the ETH or whatever, and you loop that in with like the whole government cover-up mythos, right? So it's not just, you know, not just that. Essentially, the story, interestingly enough, that like the fucking, they just keep foisting on us, the mainstream media. Like they don't ever talk about like maybe it's this, that, or the other thing. It's always just aliens coming here and the government covering it up. So, And where you sort of examine this stuff, this historical moments, cases, if you will, is through this lens of like a military intelligence influence operations that these could very well be that rather than, for lack of a better term, like little green men. Right. So I'm kind of getting your point of view here on this.
Oh, yeah. I think that I've sort of come to that as an interesting way to examine these cases, because it does have some like historical basis.
Right.
If you get like, if you talk about things like Paul Benowitz, my shirt currently is Leon Davidson's ECM plus CIA equals UFO. Like there is a basis for military operations. Honestly, the UFO topic has always been like a military topic.
Yeah,
and that's true regardless of how you cut it. It's always the military is either going to have the answer, they're hiding the answer, you know. And I've just found that that's like, it's a much more grounded approach, but it's no less interesting, is
yeah.
why I sort of kind of continued to pull that thread. Because like the perpetuation of this myth, I may sound too harsh to call it a myth, but the perpetuation of like the narratives
legend.
Get over and
yeah,
over
no.
again are, that's like an interesting story in its own right. The fact that it keeps happening, it keeps getting, you know, people keep believing it.
Yeah.
And you're talking about like the current mainstream approach to it. And I can't help but just think of how like contextless it always is. And
right.
there's such a, like a rich historical backdrop that all these things have that is never really approached. I guess because
right.
it's pretty complicated. I mean, you know that. I know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you'd think they'd at least like gesture towards it a little more.
Right, right. Well, you make an interesting point. I'm sort of basing this on the very insightful post on the Substack, the Manifest UFO.
Right.
Where you kind of spell out your perspective on this. And you do make a couple of great points that you make several, but that this idea that a lot of this shit can be orchestrated by the government is actually more plausible than, you know, than like aliens coming here and doing, like, it answers more questions. Like, it kind of
right.
can put this all into a nice, neat bow where if you're like, well, if it's an alien, how come the alien did this, that, and the other thing? And, like, I can't figure these aliens out. And it's like, well, maybe if it was people, that would right. explain this, that, and the other thing that happened.
No, I think it is, like, a rare explanation that, like, covers all – like it can cover all bases. I don't know that it always covers every base
right.
well. But it has to be said that, like – you know, some CIA operation of like a similar sort of operation, has they exist in like the historical record. And I think that alone kind of makes that explanation for the UFO, ET question way more plausible than.
Right.
Something that we have no material evidence for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I mean, I could definitely, I can humor like a interdimensional or like something more metaphysical. But that's not usually what we're given in this current this current thing. It's all very material. It's all very like, oh, this is real.
And these are like humanoid beings like us that are flying here in little metal machines. Like it's like, okay, so they're not.
Right.
Yeah, they don't give you much wiggle room there on the aliens.
Yeah. yeah. Well, and just like the communication with them. That's coming into vogue. The crash retrievals have been in vogue since God knows when, but that's still going on. And you'd think we'd have something from that
right.
point. I mean, I've sort of I sort of wonder sometimes if that's just been like a huge misunderstanding of like foreign technology that was captured.
The crash retrievals.
Right. Yeah. Like yeah. I'm thinking, and because like I'm sure they use code words, and if you're just some guy coming across like paperwork and it says like, I don't know, maybe not extraterrestrial craft, but like. And like another word for foreign, but maybe a little more exotic.
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh, there's no way this is from the Russians. This is from outer space. And then that just sort of becomes a game of telephone. The military obviously would be like, we'll just let them go with that. We'll let them roll with that.
Yeah. They'd rather people think that it's like, yeah, some once in a lifetime incident where it's an alien that crashed. But we can't tell you about it rather than like, then it's like, no, this is actually a thing that the Russians could send here at any time.
Right.
You know? So I can see why it's oddly enough, the alien threat is less ominous than the Russian threat. Well, I always think too, when you talk about that kind of stuff is how, like, I don't think enough people in ufology. Well, first of all, I feel like there's of the appreciation for the history of ufology is kind of dying out with this new generation of people who sort of only look at everything right. since post 2017. But I would be interested. I'd like to see somebody like retroactively look at this. Cause like the drones only came along. They only kind of burst into the zeitgeist, like in the last, I don't know, you know, since right. the 5 years, let's say. Right. I have a hard time conceptualizing time, I guess, but sometime like in the last 5 years, but that's when I was like, oh, drones, people started getting drones. You could get a drone of your own. Then it was like, oh, turns out the government has awesome drones. And it's like, okay, we need to look at this and then retroactively look backwards and be like, okay, what could have been fucking drones? Because clearly these things didn't just pop up overnight. So I part of me thinks like the vast, a significant amount of UFO cases, like, in some window of time leading up to the drones bursting on the scene had to have been drones.
Right. Well, and I mean, there were significant developments in like unmanned aircraft, I would say 70s or earlier. It just wasn't, it was still in development.
Right.
Still very top secret. I think that's like it. People sort of acknowledge that a lot of these things are probably military aircraft, but I don't think they sometimes realize how like exotic military aircraft can look.
Yeah.
Like I see some of those old, like really sleek, rounded edge. I don't know. This is probably not good, but I don't know military aircraft models that well.
That's fine. But
like from certain angles, they literally look like saucers, you know, and it's like, oh, well, you could have easily just seen that at like a weird angle and misconstrued it. But that seems to rarely be the case. A lot of times it's like, oh, military couldn't build something like that.
Right.
Well, I think that's sometimes true, but I definitely don't think that's always true.
Exactly. Yeah. No, for sure. Like I'm saying too, you drop somebody like in 1987 and they're out in their backyard and they see like this ball of light in the sky and it's moving erratically and it's like, no aircraft can do that. But it's like nowadays a drone, that could be a drone with light on it. It's not that, you know, but if it's like flying all over the place crazy, they're like that, what could that be? So, but it's interesting too. Like I said, this sort of angle looking at it is niche even for the UFO community. You made an interesting point. You were talking about the Soul Foundation. Mm-hmm. And just that, like, this is supposed to be the cutting edge of UFO thought right now, right? Mm-hmm. That's buyer beware, and your mileage may vary, folks, but that's what they tell me. But no one, you make a point that no one is discussing this possibility. Like, no one's like, hey, maybe shit's being orchestrated by intelligence agencies and and the government. Right. Maybe this is all, maybe this reemergence of UFOs in the second, there's clearly some kind of reason for it, but no one wants to talk about, like, the elephant in the room.
Right. Well, I've kind of talked about how, like, the UFO topic is sort of like a no-lose situation from a military point of view. Because
yeah.
You get both, like, this topic that requires you to listen and believe the military intelligence apparatus. It becomes a vital source of, like, intel itself if you have a group reporting sightings. And I couldn't list all of the reasons right now. I'm a much better writer than I am a speaker, but I'm
That's
sure right. they're in either the manifesto or state of the UFO-nian. I wrote those down, and I'm not even sure how to pronounce them. Manifest UFO.
Yeah, that's how I've been kind of saying it. But yeah, I recommend those two. I don't remember the other one, but they'll be able to find it. Those are kind of sum up your take on all this. But like I said, you just don't hear anyone really kind of asking the question, like, why is this all of a sudden really big, and like, who wants it to be really big? You know what I mean? It's a very very surface level issues with this, which is ironic because the surface level issues are like fucking aliens coming here to it's like that doesn't even, you know, that's how it's framed, which is kind of funny.
Well, I feel like it's become a lot more just like to view it like spiritually also has become much more like in vogue. And I'm not sure how I feel about that. I just went to a MUFON conference, 2 weekends ago.
Yeah, I have it here in my notes. I was going to close with that, but you want to talk about the MUFON?
I could do that. I have an article coming out tomorrow that'll expand on it more. But I was just kind of stunned with how, like, the vast majority of the speakers thought that, well, I won't say vast majority, but, like, a bigger chunk than I feel like is representative of the UFO community at large thought that UFOs and alien abductions were like demonic in nature. And then another speech, it was more like, it's still spiritual in nature, but they're a good thing. And like, I don't know, like I don't go to many UFO conferences. This is actually my first one.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. It was a lovely time. But I always assumed MUFON was more into, like, investigating.
Yeah, well, I mean...
With, like, the field manual and the... You know, they got labs and stuff. It's like...
Well, I'm going to... I don't even... this is the most ass-backwards framing of this, so forgive me, folks, but in defense of MUFON PA, they did have John Ventry there, so I get the impression they're kind of a rogue operation in the MUFON hierarchy. I get the impression they're kind of like, yeah, like an outlaw territory in old
parlance. That might be true. I guess I'm not like in the community enough to know like when I'm in outlaw territory.
Yeah, that's just a guess on my part. I feel like if he's speaking at the event and he's like a pariah, then it's like clearly these people are playing by their own rules.
Yeah, well, it definitely was. Speaking on that, it is just kind of it's kind of a weird operation to have essentially a former state director still run the conference, but who am I to
that's what I'm talking about. Yeah,
who am I to question another thing?
Okay,
Chris Mellon was supposed to be there. Chris Mellon was not there.
Ah, did they offer refunds?
No.
Ah, classless.
Well, it's even more offensive because he's only like, I want to say 30 minutes away.
Well, you need to write the MUFON constabulary or whoever is in
charge
to alert them to this outlaw operation. Well, what was
I'll
the
write
attendance?
A wiki. Oh, probably like 100.
Yeah.
50 total, kind of going in and out of different.
Well, I saw that you went, and it was what you had told me before, and then I kind of looked into it too, and it was like, if there is, I forget who I was talking about this with. I don't even know if it was on the show or not, but it's like there's acquaintance to the old style, what you experienced in a way. Like everyone crowds into a fucking Holiday Inn ballroom for an afternoon is way different than like, those are kind of a dying form of entertainment, I guess you could say, or enlightenment, right. If you were into that. They're almost like the old traveling, you know, tent shows or something. It's like they're dying out.
I kind of wish they weren't dying, because I definitely like that vibe. Maybe it's just because I constantly read about, like, the conferences happening in the 90s, and it's like, oh, I wish, but, it was an interesting little venture. It was good to give me, like, a framing of, like, the community that I'm writing about a lot.
Yeah, that's always good, yeah.
At least to an extent.
Was the mood, like, excited? Do they think that this disclosure, they're closer than ever now, so they're really close kind of thing?
I actually don't think so. I didn't get that vibe. If anything, it was kind of like paranoid. Like, they're here now and they're demonic kind of thing. They're,
Jesus, you know, Christ.
Yeah, no. That was at least like 3 of 7 of the speeches were kind of like that.
Weird. Well,
that's certainly not the approach I take, but you know, I'm open to all manner of opinions.
Yeah. That's like a post-disclosure conference. Like they're like getting ready for the arrival or some shit. Jesus.
Right.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, those are kind of dying out. You, one of the topics you write about a few different times is the Betty and Barney Hill case. Maybe this could be an example of where you see this sort of potential intelligence and government interference, the possibility that maybe this was some kind of operation, for lack of a better term.
Right. Well, so other researchers like Martin Cannon, and there's another good Substack called Nuts and Boltzmann that's kind of, they've started a series on it, and I think it's going to be continuing. That's kind of examining like the like military operation angle of the Hill abduction. But it's definitely one of those cases where I just constantly hear like more things that make me go, wait a minute, like
right.
But for instance, Martin Cannon has talked about how he's heard a recording of Betty Hill when I don't think she knew she was being recorded, where she essentially says that her and Barney were like pro-Soviet communists. And you hear that, and then you think, like, oh, while all your friends from Peace Air Force Base, if you're communists, you're in the NAACP.
Right.
Like, you know, it's a question worth asking, because usually the military doesn't rub shoulders with people of that, like civil rights. Like,
yeah. You know, well, like, yeah. One of the things that I'm sure you kind of pointed this out in the pieces, I don't recall if that's where I picked it up, because it certainly came into my mind recently. So that might be it. But it's often forgotten how significant a player Barney Hill was in civil rights up in the New England area. And then once the abduction happened, it like completely derailed his whole, you know, and then he died. And then he died. It was like,
it literally gave him like ulcers that eventually killed him. Like extremely, extremely traumatic.
Yeah.
Jack Burr has also done some stuff examining just like Benjamin Simon, who's their psychologist, It's tangentially connected to like MK Ultra doctors.
Yeah.
Even like their original trip was to Montreal, which a lot of people have pointed out, like, oh, that's Ewan Cameron's stomping grounds, another MK Ultra doctor. And
yeah.
Of course, back then, I feel like you could almost, you couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting an MK Ultra psychologist, but, nevertheless, it's like in the original hypnotic regressions, though, I always think about how Barney's description of like the people he sees, he says they look like a Nazi and a redheaded Irishman.
Yeah.
And you think like, oh, well, how did we get to aliens from there then?
Yeah.
And of course, my one of my major like rabbit holes has been the case of Bosco Nedeljkovic, who essentially said that the Vilas Boas abduction was staged by the CIA.
Yeah.
But he further says that the Betty and Barney Hill abduction was also a CIA operation.
Yeah.
So it is one of those things where like, just like little things keep hitting me. And even recently I was reading Forbidden Science, the Jacques Vallée journals, and he talks about the people who kind of convinced Betty Hill that what she was dealing with was like extraterrestrial UFO encounter, like kind of really pushed her to that idea.
Yeah.
We're both NICAP people, but they worked for IBM, and at least one of them was specifically on like a project that was like, I forget the name of it. It's essentially one of the earliest like satellite mapping projects, like
yeah.
something more than likely connected to like the Air Force or
yeah. Yeah. All right.
Just
odd.
Yeah. A lot of odd yeah. things.
A lot of odd elements to it. Yeah. Well, it makes some, like I said earlier, like when you kind of add that as a possibility, it makes things sound a little more plausible in a way. Mm-hmm. And then also you always do kind of wonder, I at least do. It's like, why that case? Like, why did that become the big thing? Like, right. some, like it kind of got promoted. Like, clearly, not unlike what we're seeing nowadays, like somebody wanted this to be like out there. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just because it was like fantastic and zany. It was like,
right.
Yeah, but it somehow got from A to B, like, in an unusual fashion. Like, they didn't go to the... It got leaked right. and shit. It got leaked by somebody. I forget who now.
I think it was Benjamin Simon's secretary, or, like, the who was ever transcribing the hypnosis notes. And it's like, that's super uncommon.
Right, yeah. Like, what kind of... yeah.
And then they had to go national with it, and the person who wrote the book on it is constantly accused of like being a CIA asset kind of thing. And it just makes you wonder.
Yeah. Who's the one that's accused of being a CIA asset? Fuller?
John G. Fuller, yeah.
Really? I've never heard that.
Well, I think this is coming from a Nick Redfern piece where he looks at Fuller wrote the book on that that like French town that started having like hallucinations.
Yeah.
And Fuller's conclusion is that it's ergot poisoning, but it's like pretty well, I wouldn't say established, but it's like a good bet that it was some kind of hallucinogen testing as opposed yeah. to like widespread ergot poisoning.
Yeah.
And he's written a few other books where it's like he definitely had like contacts that make you wonder. I have one back there called We Almost Lost Detroit, which is about some kind of like nuclear accident that
yeah.
I feel like isn't common knowledge. So it's pretty clear that he's talking to someone inside of maybe not the company, but like, you know, someone in the know.
Interesting. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, because he wrote. He also is the guy that put the Exeter case on the map too. So.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm pretty familiar with that because I go up there all the time to visit shit. They have a big festival and everything. So. Yeah. Interesting. I never heard that about John Fuller.
Right. He also did a book on the psychic surgeon Arrigo. Arrigo?
Yeah.
And I always wonder about that one because Arrigo was around the same time Jim Jones was visiting psychic surgeons in Brazil.
Yeah.
Yeah, just interesting things. Arrigo was possessed by the spirit of a German doctor named, I want to say like, I don't know, some extremely German name.
Yeah.
It's always made me like wonder what's going on there.
And he could perform surgeries like, well, is that what the story?
Yeah, he could like, well, his nickname, I think the title of the Fuller book is Arrigo, Surgeon of the Rusty Knife, because he'd use rusty utensils, his hands, and he'd be able to take out tumors, and people would be healed. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like probably a lot of sleight of hands.
Yeah, where was this?
This was in Brazil.
Okay.
Something I've always noted is, I mean, this is me getting kind of paranoid, but Arrigo's first encounter with the German doctor who possessed him was in the same region of Brazil as the Vilas Boas encounter.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah. Weird. I mean, it's a pretty populous region, but it was around the same time, which has always made me wonder about it.
Yeah, well, that is odd. Well, you would think, different sort of... there were little sort of encampments of where they pulled off these things. Yeah, it would make sense. Well, another kind of connecting to the Betty and Barney Hill thing, I was interested. It's a Forbidden Science Dispatches 4B, in case that means anything.
Right.
where you talk about James E. McDonald sort of like through the lens of Valet's recounting of the whole thing and also just his experience of what happened to him. And I never realized, it's another thing kind of that goes, in this instance, I don't even know if it got put out there very much at all, maybe in Ann Drubble's book, but just that Betsy McDonald was like super into activism. To the point that she likely definitely was like drawing government in, maybe more so. Maybe the government was more interested in what she was up to with these militant groups and stuff than what James McDonald was actually doing with the UFOs.
Right. Yeah. Well, it is just like some of it is in Ann Druffel's book, but that's basically the only place I've heard it. And again, it's like you think of the UFO community and they have like these conspiratorial ideas, but it's always like related to UFO truth. And that's why they killed James McDonald.
Right.
But
really,
he would have been monitored by the government, not for just like, you know, his UFO studies. He was doing studies on atmosphere pollution, like toxic runoff from a military base. His wife was super socially active. They housed Black Panthers. He would have been on the radar. And I think it's also from Druffel's book, where she talks about how it was just like fairly well established that many at the University of Arizona in that time period were just being monitored.
Yeah.
Like everybody knew who the CIA agents were on campus kind of thing. and I just think about how that's such a, because I do think the circumstances of his death were odd. I wouldn't go so far as to say like, he got offed by the CIA because at the time of his death, he was basically functionally blind. Not in a very good state. So I think a suicide is definitely possible. But that's, again, another one of those instances where I'm just kind of befuddled that, like, these details that seem like super important are just like never talked about.
What's that? That Betsy's activism or just how he died?
Both of their activism as a lens through which to
examine
things like
would this happen to these I see what you're saying, yes.
He was considered like a UFO scientist, but he's wearing multiple hats at once, and you just like pay attention to one hat, and I think it tends to give like an incomplete picture.
Yeah, because you do make that point in the piece too, that he was kind of like an environmental thorn in the side of officialdom in various jurisdictions. So it was like he probably had a lot of enemies beyond people like who gave a fuck about aliens and UFOs.
Yeah, well, and he wasn't even super popular amongst like ufologists in his day. Like,
that's the impression I got. Yeah, that he was kind of like he was super like humorless and straight laced and tough like that.
Well, and Vallée and Hynek both seem to not much like him. of course, Vallée went on to write the foreword to that Anne Druffel book, which I found really funny, like directly after reading Forbidden Science, where he spends multiple entries complaining about how bull-headed James McDonald is.
Yeah.
But again, it's like one of those things where it's like J. Allen Hynek, for all his good qualities, tended to be very submissive to like military authority.
Yeah. And
James McDonald was not that. I think that's cause to wonder, like, is that a reason why he would have been killed?
Yeah, well, I mean, they don't necessarily have to, like, show up there with the gun either. They could just make his life miserable until he, like, kills himself. That was kind of the impression I got, you know.
And they kind of did do that, because one of the hearings he was testifying at was specifically for, I may be misremembering, but I think it was noise pollution.
Something like that, yeah. I know the anecdote you're talking about, yeah.
Well, yeah, someone just basically embarrasses him, humiliates him, talking about his interest in UFOs.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that seemed to spiral him.
It definitely seemed like many, many different organizations could have had it in for him.
Right, exactly. And plus, you could take into the account, too, that there's like there's like an obsessiveness that can develop in some of these folks who look into the UFO phenomenon and try to solve it. Like, they get really wrapped up in the quest to solve it. Now the quest to sort of, I don't know what, get the government to say aliens are real. That's at the end of the day, that is the quest. Let's be honest. Yeah. Like, interestingly, they still dance around it. Again, it's like, that's what confuses me, I suppose, about the current state of everything. It's super popular in the media, but they only sort of vaguely hint about the alien part. And it's like, look, we're all talking, like, you're all kind of talking about the same thing. Let's just say it.
Well, they even say, like, non-human biologics or whatever, and that's like, that's like an obfuscation of like one of the easiest questions imaginable.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It is weird how that's like hinted, but they're also cagey. I have to assume that's because these people don't want to be caught with their pants down eventually, I guess.
Who's that?
No, just, you know, anybody saying like, we have proof of non-human craft. Non-human.
Yeah, well, that's
non-human entities.
Yeah, well, anyone saying that is like, that's the, you can't really necessarily lose because you just keep saying that the government's covering it up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I try to avoid getting cynical, but I think I definitely approach that at times, just because it's like, it's kind of like a carousel.
Right.
We're constantly circling back to the same thing. And it's no more fun each time.
No. But you're familiar with the ride, so that makes, you know, it's amazing how many people are on the ride right now who don't realize that, like, they're on a ride that.
Right. Well, and I would say my approach is like, I analyze the different animals of the carousel and its construction.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's what I like about you. You post in the Manifestiofo that, I got it that time. That was a good pronunciation of it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think I've ever said it out loud.
Is that you're a lot like me. I got shit for this, like, when I first got started in the field, like, long, long time ago, that I'm more interested in the characters and the people than the actual phenomenon. Because the phenomenon, more often than not, is kind of like super fucking vague or hard to like wrap your mind around. It's like, oh, it was a glowing light that moved around, or it was like a ship that, okay, it's like, I don't even know how I can.
Right.
But, and I think this is what you're doing and what a lot of folks have done in more recent times is like, I think a big piece of the puzzle is missed on the people who actually had the experiences. And if we look deeper into them, like you were talking about Betty and Barney Hill, Jim McDonald and Betsy McDonald. Like, if we take a second look at the people, you know, who are kind of the center of these stories, it's like, well, maybe there was more. Maybe they're the key to this whole thing. And then again, then that wraps into this sort of intelligence operations sort of theory, if you will.
Right. Well, I think the longer I've been sort of in like this field of study, I guess I'll call it.
Yeah.
I found that some of the most interesting and probably relevant material literally comes from like things that researchers say to one another that never get printed.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I find that interesting. I don't necessarily know if that's a good way to keep at it, but I would hope some of these things get written down sooner or later.
Yeah, but you, I guess that's a different sort of animal in a way, but you're like talking about sort of like a researcher to research. But in a way, too, you see that nowadays, we've always seen it, but it's like people say they're told they know things, but they can't really say. There's always kind of alludes to things. They've been told things by certain people that. But you never really, you never get the payoff to it.
Right. Endless game of telephone kind of thing.
Yeah.
What I also find kind of frustrating about sort of the current zeitgeist is there's like a real lack of interest in like the high strangeness side.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I'm like, I was raised on Fort. I was raised on Kiel.
Yeah.
These guys were weirdos, and they loved, like, soaking in a bunch of weirdness. And
right.
Nowadays, it's, like, interpersonal drama and, you know, like, rumors without much of, like, a good story behind it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's government-issued UFOs. It's like,
right.
I've taken to calling it, it's like the UAP era, and all these people care about is the government and the government's deal with the UAPs and shit, and people are forgetting, like, you never really hear too often a crazy, like, story. I guess the one with the Las Vegas aliens might be the, the most recent one that was kind of like, oh, okay, that's a crazy-ass story. But generally, it's UFO, I mean, world.
As dumb as it was, the Miami Mall aliens was a pretty good day.
That's true. Also, yes. That was a scary one, only because it was like, Jesus, they could really spread the craziest stories out there with, like, bad videos and shit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I find that interesting. I feel like for most of my life, even in the social media era, the UFO paranormal stuff has never been sort of this prolific, I want to say.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely UFOs. This is like the biggest UFOs have been since probably when the X-Files became super big.
Right.
I think it's even bigger than that probably because now the government's talking about it.
Right. But I find that weird because it's more boring than it's ever been.
It's totally more boring. It's completely more boring. The government's made it super fucking boring. That's yeah. Partially – yeah, I think that's why you see a lot of it's this interpersonal drama because the phenomenon itself is not very interesting.
Right.
When you look at it through this contemporary lens. It's really – like I said, it's all just shit the government's seeing – the airplanes are seeing on their radars. It's never like the good yeah. stories like we used to hear growing up that was like Pascagoula or something.
Right, like abductions, freaky entities. The ones I really like are like when there's like poltergeist activity after the UFO encounter. I guess that kind of exists in the Skinwalker story, but I'll ignore that one for now.
Yeah, that one's a whole kettle of fish. That's a wild one. Yeah. Yeah, we're still waiting. I feel like that's a story that's not going to be fully told for, like, another generation or something like that.
No. Yeah, there is something, like, I don't know. The way it's been sort of, like, I remember picking up, like, Hunt for Skinwalker
mm-hmm.
and being like, this really doesn't get to the bottom of anything. And then I've heard all the stuff from the new one, and I always feel like there's just lingering questions that, or it's not like trying to answer whether the paranormal was real, but like, just like circumstantial questions, like how did we get here that
yeah.
haven't been answered. Like that was my main takeaway from a lot of the Skinwalker books. I haven't seen the show. Have you seen the show?
No, I don't really watch any paranormal TV. But I've That's- seen,
That's probably Oops. Extremely wise.
Yeah. Well, I work in paranormal all day, so. but yeah, no, I don't know. Yeah, Skinwalker. Yeah, it's something's off about it. Just how it got mythologized and then commodified. But along the way, they never actually got anything. Like they never actually proven that this is some kind of like spooky wonderland of weird. It's just
right.
You just have to take it at face value. That's kind of the idea at this point.
Well, it almost feels like an ARG, except no one can participate but a bunch of government guys.
Right, right. Well, that's become ufology, the UAP era now. It's kind of what I was talking about. I've mentioned this right. a lot of times on the show. It's very reactionary. As
right.
opposed
yeah.
to back in the day when the UFO buffs were like, okay, something happened. Let's go look into this thing. Now it's like people are just reacting to whatever the latest machination of this boring-ass legislature and government, DOD investigation is.
Right, right. Yeah, no, there is just a lot of things missing that, oh, I mean, that's an understatement of the century, but it could be done in a way that I would find more entertaining, but I'm almost like, I almost get like bored of like reiterating what I've said, like 30 times at this point where it's
yeah.
like, you can't really trust these people. Please reconsider, look at the history. Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're not going to listen to us. We've all been saying this kind of stuff since it happened, but
right,
it is what it is.
I mean, I get it. I've been on the more believer side of the spectrum at different points in my life. I get it. I think that's why it still interests me and why I still write about it. Is because I do understand like the fascination. I just have concerns.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've beaten, we're probably both treading over ground. We've also covered another conversation. But yeah, I've beaten the drum where it's like, look, no one has. What's going
motorcycle.
On over there?
Sorry.
Pittsburgh. Highway Patrol. Pip.
I live in the center of a drag racing track.
Oh, that's colorful.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. interesting. All right. Yeah, so, yeah, no, but the – I lost my train of thought, but, yeah, we were talking about sort of well-trod ground. But, yeah, it's kind of – we'll just see what happens. Oh, yeah, you never – in my view, you never hear anyone talk about, okay, well, what are you going to do when you get the ball over the finish line? Like, okay, so what, you want the government to tell us that aliens are here, then what? Like, what would you like us to fucking do, you know? Like,
right.
Like, if they, there's this misconception that all of a sudden the aliens are going to be just sharing the planet with us immediately. And it's like, that's not how it even works, dude. Like,
right.
None of us are going to fucking Mars.
Well, I'm still not quite sure what catastrophic disclosure was, but I knew we were almost there at one point.
Catastrophic disclosure.
Yeah. Do you ever get like a good definition on what that meant?
No, I don't even know. I never heard of this. What is catastrophic disclosure?
I don't know. I heard it in the rumblings, but it was like, we still haven't gotten the truth, so we're approaching catastrophic disclosure now, when all of the white hats will come out of the woodwork and reveal all of the government's secrets. I guess that's why it's catastrophic.
Sounds pretty catastrophic, yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. Involving aliens or everything?
I assume UFOs and aliens, but...
All right.
Yeah.
Jeez. I can't imagine caring about aliens now. I've gone beyond that. I've gone beyond the aliens now. I'm like, fucking, fuck the aliens, dude. Like, at some point, it's like, they won't... They're not interested. Like, look, can you take no for an answer, humanity? Fuck.
Well, I think about, too, like, even if I bought into, like, the... material reality of like an alien gray.
Yeah.
I wouldn't trust them at all.
Oh no, you can't. Right, exactly. Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of the discussion is like the government knows and works with them, and it's like I don't want the government to work with them.
No. Well, all the alleged like deals are always like shitty for everybody. You know, for you and me, where it's like, yeah, they made a deal, we got alien technology, and you're pretty much fend for yourself if they come looking for you. We've got
free energy now. You can't have it, but we'll use it on our military vehicles.
Yeah, and also you may be hunted by aliens.
Right.
See, that would be – I'd be down for at least if they disclosed that. It would make life a little more interesting.
Yeah, like – We'd be trying to figure out which fourth of us were being abducted every couple of months.
Yeah. You'd live in it would just be a part of your life. It'd be like bear attacks, alien abductions, it could happen. The government told us they cut that fucking deal, you know.
Right.
I hope it was worth it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Now, one of the stories I feel kind of bad because you did it, you talked about it on Steve Berg's show, but I'm a huge this story, like, just captivated me because it's so – it's quaint. It's the St. Peter at Sonic Drive-In saga, if you will. Because it's got kind of everything. It's got kind of your UFO huckster. It's got your sort of starry-eyed believers. It's got your sort of Midwestern wackiness. It's just got it all. It's sort of like actually, I was surprised that it was, like, not – entirely that long ago, right? It was like 89.
Yeah.
When you first hear the story, you kind of think it's like the 60s or something, but it's like, no, this was like, I was alive for when this happened. I just didn't know about it when I was a little kid. Can you kind of give us the rundown on the story?
Sure. St. Peter at the Sonic Drive-In is about a collection of UFO believers in Russell, Kansas, which is teeny tiny town out in western Kansas, famous for being the home of Bob Dole and Arlen Specter.
Oh, wow.
But it's only like, I want to say 3,000 people. Super small. And this woman named Donna Butts, I try not to laugh at that every time. It is hard for me to say. Maybe I just haven't left grade school yet.
Yes. When you say that, then you give me license to be like, oh, wow, that is rather clever.
You're right. So Donna Butts was basically I would say a channeler, but apparently there were like physical contacts with aliens / angels. It's one of those like complex religious cosmologies where she has an initial UFO sighting, and then that cascades into just all manner of weird beliefs. And what always impresses me is that she convinces the person who investigated her UFO sighting from Kufos, a guy named Dr. Scott Quarter.
Yeah.
And he joined her group. She convinced others. Some newspaper articles said that there were maybe even like a dozen in the group at one time, which is like when you live in Russell, Kansas, that is nothing to sneeze at. That's like,
right.
That's like a decently sized book club.
Yeah. That's a school committee voting block.
Right. And, what am I trying to say? So they have this group and everything's fine. They're having fun times channeling and having a government contact, which, I always, that obviously makes me, because when I initially started writing it, I was like, oh, this will just be a fun little story about a group of UFO believers who went missing for a bit, and then in the investigation. And it's a pretty unique story. Not many people have heard about it. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
And then there's like 100 pages of them talking to some guy who says he's with the Pentagon. And obviously my ears perk up. That's they eventually disappear when a member of their group passes away, because they think it's a sign that like revelation is coming.
Oh God.
And yeah, they disappear. Everybody in Russell freaks out. They make jokes about how they were abducted by aliens.
Yeah.
Lots of fun stuff like that. And, eventually it turns out that they were flying to Israel to witness like the end of days happen.
God.
But it's weird though, right? Because they drive out to basically Utah, I believe, and stay in a trailer for a bit, and then drive across the country to Washington, D.C. to fly to Israel.
What?
Yeah, well, it makes me think like they thought they were being tracked or something.
Maybe.
And one of them definitely thought they were being followed the whole time. But obviously, that could just be like paranoia that's built up in this like very specifically weird religious movement. But obviously, the end of days doesn't happen. And it all kind of fades away. Scott Quarter leaves the group early because his wife threatened to divorce him. And fair enough, he did not stay in Israel. And then when nothing happened, there was kind of a schism. Everybody returned. After all that,
the party was over, kind of.
Right, the group ends. It's kind of like a when prophecy fails situation.
But in this instance, it actually took? Where they were like, all right, fuck it.
In some places, yes. Scott Quarter actually still has a church that is very similar to what the group originally believed, where it's based on, like, UFO sightings and revelation, you know, very apocalyptic. But the other is just kind of went home. Some people lost their jobs. And, Jesus. You know, it faded into UFO obscurity.
Is Mrs. Butts or Ms. Butts still around?
Last I checked, she was. And one of the followers who was a school teacher that lost their job after disappearing for 3 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
They still live in the same town, supposedly.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they still believe in UFOs, but well, believe in UFOs. I don't know if they have their, that was a really bad way to word that. I don't know if they have this UFO religion still, but they're still interacting with each other, which I find interesting for sure.
Well, I'll make a request, so you don't have to do this, but I'll make a request. You got to track down Donna Butts, dude. Find out, get you know, Donna Butts Revisited. Find out what she thinks of her adventure from 1989. Maybe she has some interesting insights.
I have thought about it, but then every, article I read that kind of took place after the fact is, we contacted her, and she pretended she was a different Donna Butts. She doesn't want to talk about it anymore.
Oh, no.
And I kind of, I don't know. I'm worried about doing this in some cases.
Oh, yeah. It's not, yeah. That's why I'm challenging you to do it. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Come on. Please do it for me. No. I think in a lot of the things I look into, at least the St. Peter at the Sonic Drive-In, and the Gulf Breeze 6, it's kind of things that I feel like the people involved could consider embarrassing.
Yeah.
So I feel like in both of those cases, it's been harder to contact people.
Yeah.
But I'm typically pretty non-judgmental. I'm kind of an outside observer. I, if anyone, can get how you can get wrapped up in
system
or
yeah,
that kind of fervor.
It is easy to get caught up in all that.
Yeah, I find it hard to reassure sources of that sometimes. So, but I hope that I can eventually come across as a non-threatening investigator.
Yeah, you're an independent observer, like you said. That's kind of how I try to take on this stuff, because it's better for your mental health, I think, than having some kind of I don't want to speak for you, but I'd love it if aliens were real and Bigfoot was real and all this shit was real, right. and but it's I don't have an emotional need for that to happen, so.
Oh no! Well, Bigfoot. I have an emotional need for Bigfoot.
Yeah, there's an affinity there. Right. Yeah, But I'm not angrily writing my congressman about why there haven't been hearings on Bigfoot, which I would fucking love. Wouldn't that? I would be enraptured by.
Right.
On Bigfoot.
I'd be excited if it came out, but I'm definitely not banking on it. I find that a really odd way to be. In fact, I struggle to focus on this, cause this is primarily a hobby for me. I have a day job, and sometimes it's really hard for me to get into the mindset. And then I think about the people who are in it to win it, disclosure is going to happen. And I'm how do you think about this? All 20%. Of the time, this is a hobby I love and I can't even do it.
Yeah. Like I said, it turns into an obsession. And interestingly, as I said, it's like this UAP era. Their thing is they're not trying to figure out the UFO mystery. They're just fucking, they want the government to tell us what they figured out. And it's like this completely different narrative structure of the mystery. It's completely fucking changed from a bunch of eccentric weirdos across the country trying to figure out what these things are to, we give up, just tell us the answer.
I definitely like the X-Files era a little more, where it was, you know, trust no one. There's a little bit too much trust in government when it comes to the UFO crowd, I would say.
Yeah. Well, it's exposed sort of the agenda in a way, because like it only when the government says what they want to hear is the government trustworthy. But like when the government doesn't say what they want to hear, then they're full of shit and they're part of the cover up. And it's just like, it's so transparent.
Yeah. That,
you know, like they hate this Sean Kirkpatrick guy or whatever, but like if he came out tomorrow and he was like, look, everyone, I've been bullshitting you all along. The fucking aliens are here. I got a fucking, you know, it's all real, blah, blah, blah. They would fall on their hands and knees and they would say,
yeah,
Sean Kirkpatrick, fucking, you're a patriot. You've done the right thing.
They love that
now
one,
too. Now he's telling the truth.
They love calling whistleblowers and people affirming UFO belief patriots.
I've noticed that. Yeah, that's why I use that term.
I don't think someone who reveals extraterrestrial things is by definition a patriot. It's really weird, right?
Yeah, no, it is very.
It's
the whole
sort of that military reverence that I'm like, I get baffled by it, but at the same time, I do think it's a bit intentional when. Like sort of like the kayfabe of it, too, is like, it's like trust in government, trust in military is at like all time lows right now. Like,
right.
This is a good. It's like an underrated way to get like a substantial portion of the population, and it's like a growing portion of the population to essentially believe in. You know, like military and government interests again.
Yeah.
I'm just sort of riffing at this point.
No. This is been all of America, man. This is what it is. It's this is how it goes. But no, you're absolutely right. And the whole thing when this reemerged has been framed as like a threat. That was the controversial AA tip. The T in the tip was threat. So it's like, all right, well. Because up until then, I mean, I don't know about you. You have an understanding, appreciation for UFO history. Besides, you know, the human hunting aliens for their wacky abduction experiments. There was never any – UFOs were never really seen as like a threat. They were seen as sort of like a benign mystery.
Right. Well, and that's another one of those ways where I feel like it definitely – like I feel like we've seen sort of the like – kind of like quiet part out loud bits where they're like, it could be Russia, it could be China. And it's like, wait, I thought this was aliens, you know, like,
right.
It's clear that they're trying to, it's kind of like a Cold War tactic almost. It's like, I'm trying to think of a Cold War movie. It's like Body Snatchers kind of. Let's see.
All right. I'm not familiar with that one, but I'll take your word for it.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
Oh, okay. All right. I thought there was some other, you know, they spin these movies off and shit. So I'm like, oh, what is that? Like a 2017 remake? I don't know. All right. Yeah. It's definitely, the whole threat and it could be Russia. It could be China. It's a big old fucking mess. Talk about the, we'll jump to Gulf Breeze 6. We'll bring you back into sort of, something that you've put a considerable amount of time into this case. Like looking through all the things and it's like chapter 13, it goes up to, and then I think one of them, you're like, this is the last time I'm going to talk about this. And then like later on, then there's another one up at the top. It's like, he can't get off this Gulf 36. Now, can you,
I can't leave it.
for my own edification and for the Banal America listeners, I'm sure there's a lot of people who are like intimately familiar with the Gulf Breeze 6 story. But personally, I have my mind like Swiss cheese because I have to keep all this shit in my fucking mind. So I have to know shit about Amelia Earhart. I need to know Dyatlov Pass. I got to be able to talk about Flat Earth. So all this other shit like slips through my mind. So I know the Gulf Breeze 6 story is a relatively recent incident wherein six army guys got mixed up with like a Ouija board, and then they went AWOL, and they just generally caused a ruckus. That's honestly, if you put a gun to my head and said, that is my definition of the Gulf Breeze 6. So can you tell me the fucking story as it actually happens to the best of your learned ability, because you've put together this awesome piece. Now, obviously, you know, we don't go through all, but you know, give me the color on this one.
Well, no, you've got the basic story correct. I would just add that they were Army intelligence analysts at the biggest listening post in Europe at the time, which is in Augsburg, Germany.
Okay.
And fun fact, Augsburg is also where Lynn Buchanan was found by like General Stubblebine to start the remote viewing program.
Interesting.
So, Augsburg already has this weird like paranormal history. They do start using a Ouija board, but they also tried like a bunch of different like basically channeling methods.
Now, let me stop you. Now, this is on their own volition. Right. This is during their downtime, right? So this isn't like a government experiment or anything like that. Okay.
Yes. Well, yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Because you, based on the way, again, the lens through which you see this, you think that this is the hidden hand has somehow manipulated events at some point along the way.
There's just some weird things that occur. Like, for instance, I found out through some of the documents at the back of one of the Gulf Breeze 6 wrote a book about his experience. His name was Vance Davis.
Yeah.
And he has some documents from their investigation scanned in the appendix to the book. And I realized that someone had actually told the military police they were leaving the base before they left.
Okay.
And they weren't put on alert. They still just waltzed out.
So just to circle back. So they're on this military base in Germany. They're fucking around with the Ouija board. Mm-hmm. And what? They thought they got some kind of message from aliens?
It wasn't aliens. It was
another world
various saints and religious figures.
Interesting.
So not all that different from the Russell Kansas group.
Yeah, exactly. Well, when you corrected that, that's what I thought, because it's like, it's kind of funny how these aliens always turn into angels, like really fast. So they get messages from another worldly being, and that tells them to leave Germany.
It gives them a whole like laundry list of predictions.
Oh, Jesus.
There's like hundreds of them.
Oh, God.
And one of them was like, obviously this isn't really written down anywhere, but supposedly one of them was that the Gulf War was coming and that they had to leave before they got stuck in Europe during the Gulf War.
Okay.
But of course, my brain is like, you're intelligence analysts. You probably just knew the Gulf War was coming.
Right. That makes sense.
It was like a month away.
Oh, God. Yeah, they had to have known. Yeah, yeah.
Like, they're like, the Ouija board told us things are heating up.
So we got to get the fuck out of here. Yeah.
Meanwhile, their NSA computers are like flashing red, you know. They're contacting all these entities, saints. They talk to the Virgin Mary at one point.
Oh.
And eventually it tells them they have to leave, go back to the States, and hide in the wilderness while, like, a certain event blows over, and then they'll emerge and come back out to sort of, like, serve as God's warriors against Satan.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll be, they'll be in good shape, for the dystopian, post-apocalyptic world,
Right.
Okay, so that, so they do go back to, is that where the Gulf Breeze part comes from?
Yeah, so they go back to the States, and two of them were stationed at Pensacola Naval Air Station at one point. So they were familiar with, like, the Gulf Breeze area, and they basically bunk with friends that they had made during their time in Pensacola.
Yeah.
And two of the Gulf Breeze Six wind up marrying these women that they stay with in Pensacola. So it's obviously there's like a romantic.
Yeah. So there's also,
there as well.
Who knew this was a love story?
It, you know, it kind of is. it's kind of beautiful. A couple of them are still married to this day, I think.
Okay, so then, so they hide out in Florida.
And they eventually, it's weird, they get caught out for, one of them has like a busted tail light, and when he's trying to go out to a nightclub or something, the officer obviously runs his information, and I forget which soldier it is, I think it's Michael Hextat, and he's like, please don't look me up, you'll be signing my death warrant.
Oh, God.
Which is technically true, because like desertion is like technically death penalty in some cases, but then obviously that brings up every alert. Eventually they all get found out, all get arrested. It's like basically like a SWAT operation to find them, because they assumed that, apparently they assumed that they had like documents or some kind of like terrorist plot. It's sort of messy, right? Because there's not much communication going out from the time that they're arrested or like about the operation.
Right. But it would stand to reason if you put yourself in the shoes of the government. It's like these six guys just up and took off.
Right.
And then went to Florida. It's like, clearly you would think like, oh, they're up to something. They're
right.
they must have some kind of like agenda here for why they, unless all six just like wanted to, didn't want to fight anymore. They weren't even like soldiers, really. They were
intelligence agents.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like they weren't going to be on the front lines or anything that I could think of, especially they were like in Germany and shit. So I think the government would be like, are they traitors? Did they fucking all get together and decide they didn't, they were against the war or whatever and decided and took shit and maybe you're going to barter that to, Snowden in it or whatever. So,
So the documents they had were not sensitive documents. They assumed they were, but really it was just a dossier of things that Bill Cooper put out and something that an Ashtar command lady gave them. So they weren't like actually sensitive documents. I think they were just like wrapped up into the like belief that they had something important. They were channeling this stuff.
Yeah.
It seemed to reflect the documents they had received. It's sort of like a grab bag of, like belief systems.
Now, when did this all go down?
This is 1990, I believe.
Wow.
And then,
go ahead.
And then the Butts quarter contacts were, I think, either 91 or 92. I may have this backwards. I'm doing this all from memory.
It's all right.
They're like very they're extremely similar, and it's
because
it's like they disappear without warning. They talk to saints.
Yeah,
both involve like the end of days, but there's also UFOs for some reason. And obviously Gulf Breeze, where they wind up, had all the UFO trappings
yes.
in 1990 because, you know, Ed Walters, like Gulf Breeze sightings.
Yes. That's why I have trouble with the Gulf Breeze 6 case in a lot of ways, I think, because I get confused with the other
right.
Gulf Breeze case. And I'm always like, doesn't it involve like, and my mind starts to wander into the Ed Walters story. And it's like, no, that's a whole different thing.
Well, it's not completely disconnected, though, right? So what I found was that Ed Walters' wife, well, actually, Ed and Frances Walters were friends with the person that the Gulf Breeze 6 stayed at.
I'm trying to
figure out how to word this. But
interesting.
So Anna Foster is the name of the person that the Gulf Breeze 6 stayed with at the time,
yeah.
essentially harboring them.
Yeah.
When they were arrested, Foster sent her daughter to basically live with Ed and Frances Walters for a while because she was friends with them.
Yeah.
And people say Gulf Breeze 6, and sometimes you hear the rumor about them thinking that Ed Walters was Satan.
But
rarely do you see that, like, they actually had, like, a weird kind of, like, connection. Because Anna Foster was also at the MUFON conference that happened a few days before the Gulf Breeze 6 arrived.
Yeah.
It's clear that, like, it is separate from the... the like UFO madness, but not completely. Like it shares
right.
a lot of elements with it.
One would think maybe of the six, like someone was kind of got connected to the UFO scene in Gulf Breeze or something like that.
Right.
So what became of these dudes after they were arrested? Did they face serious charges?
They did not. They forgo a court martial, and it's assumed that that's because either the government didn't really think they were a threat or they just didn't want an investigation. Because if you court martial them, the investigation has to be public. Whereas
right.
if you do what they did, which was like a general discharge and a slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
Like basically like 2 months back pay
yeah.
is taken away, and they're let go without much of punishment at all. Some of them would later say that they got honorable discharges. I don't think that's true at the time, but they may have been able to get them upgraded to honorable later on.
okay. That's a good upgrade.
Which is interesting, right?
Yeah.
So Vance Davis is the most vocal of the Gulf Breeze 6 after the fact. In fact, a few of them were on like the sightings episode that had them, but Davis is like the only one who's like written a book or talked about it post like 1995.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Yeah.
It's just Davis that talks about it.
Is he still around talking about it or not?
He is. I actually heard him on a podcast not that long ago.
Okay.
Where he kind of talks about it.
Because I would love to hear, like, someone else, again, not necessarily you, because I've already got you chasing down
right.
Maureen Butts. So we got to assign someone else this one. Maybe Jack Brewer. He's my main man, Jack Brewer. I love that guy.
That was another thing about that MUFON conference. They said Jack Brewer
wrote
an attack piece on David Jacobs. I don't think that's what that Grays Have Been Framed chapter is. I think that's leaving out some details.
Yeah. I don't know how facts constitute a hit piece, but that's it's like when the facts are super shitty, dude. I don't know. I mean, people draw their own conclusion, Dr. Jacobs.
Right. I happen to notice the facts weren't mentioned. In fact, very little detail was mentioned other than that the book was an attack piece. You think they'd give a reason, right?
They don't want to open that can of worms, I'm sure. It would have been great if someone like raised their hand and was like, what was that attack piece about? What was the what were the details there, sir? How we got on track. Yeah, I would love to hear. I would love it if someone could track down these other five guys. Maybe one of them would be interested in talking, like, now almost 30 years later or whatever. There are a lot of these characters still floating around from some of these, right. You know, my white whale, Jamie Shandera. Where is this guy?
Like, right, yeah.
I've always wanted someone to find Jamie Shandera and get him on a podcast and sort of just revisit these olden days. But, yeah, the Gulf Breeze 6 people would equally be interesting to hear from.
I believe you me, I've tried to contact some of them and haven't really gotten much at all.
Yeah.
I've gotten a hold of some people that just kind of seemed annoyed, but it wasn't even like one of the six. It was like someone who I thought could let me talk to one of the six.
So. Oh, yeah. So it was like a cousin or something. They're like, right. Why are you contacting me on Facebook about my crazy cousin?
Right.
Who got mixed up with the Ouija board, man? Get the hell out of here.
I did find something that I feel like has been under-examined in the Gulf Breeze 6 case, is that one of the six, Ken Beeson, actually wrote a fiction novel in like 2013.
Oh, wow.
And when I looked it up, I realized that it had only been mentioned in like one above top secret post.
Yeah.
And I just kind of came across it on Amazon. I was like, has anybody ever read this?
And did you read it?
I did. And I think there's some readings of it where it's extremely similar to like what went down in Germany.
Interesting.
Where, you know, like literally the Antichrist is the villain of the novel. And it definitely makes me wonder, like, is this just him admitting that it was like an imaginative thing, wasn't real? But then again, I don't really know. It could be like a veiled memoir or something.
Yeah. Well, what interests me too is like no one knows the dynamics of that group.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like who was the leader of this? Who kind of was along for the ride? Who got swept up in it, you know, later? Well, who wanted to get bail out was like, this is crazy. You know what I mean? Like there must have been some wild adventure
Like, the dynamics change depend on who's talking at a given time. It's pretty bizarre. Some places say that Davis is the leader. Other places say Beeson. Sometimes they have an equal role, you know. But, and then sometimes, like, one of them was, I can't remember the name at the moment, but yeah, it completely changes. Sometimes some of them are seen as followers. Other times they're just like, this is all based on like interviewing fellow soldiers who knew these people.
Yeah.
And it seems very different from what is conveyed in both Vance Davis's book and what's conveyed in later newspaper reporting.
Yeah.
It's definitely very hard to get like a clear story.
Yeah. So
I've tried my darndest, but I still don't exactly know what I would conclude with the Gulf.
Yeah.
That's why I keep adding on to it.
Well, it's even though it was a while ago, it's still kind of a relatively recent case in UFO lore. And like I said, I'd love it if one of the people you don't hear from very often just comes forward and it's like, look, now I'm going to tell you my version of events. Because it is like that movie there where the the Rashomon or something. You know, it's like everybody yeah. has a different perspective on this, on what went down, and we don't know. We've only heard a handful of takes on it. So
I mean, we've only really heard like one completely, and I feel like that's Vance Davis, and it's kind of changed depending on which time he's told it.
Right.
And I think that just may be, you know, he was trying to hit like the New Age circuit at one point. But I also think just like maybe there's some things where he has to like conceal what was happening.
Yeah.
Depending on like what exactly it was, you know.
Right.
Jacques Vallée basically was like, I wonder if they actually got this information from the same source that they got their, you know, the intelligence they were analyzing. Was it actually from a Ouija board or was it from one of their like monitors, you know?
Yeah.
And that's like a reading I definitely am curious about, but I don't, at the same time, I feel like it could be a mixture of like things that they're getting from science fiction, things that they're getting from, you know, in foreign intelligence.
Right.
Just like.
Then whatever they perceived they were getting on the Ouija board, maybe?
Right. Well, and like preconceived religious ideas.
Yeah.
Like one of them was Catholic, and oh, what do you know? The Virgin Mary has contacted us. And
right, right.
It's like, that's why it kind of became like a cosmic gumbo, I feel like, is. Because everybody was kind of throwing their beliefs into it.
What an interesting, it kind of became like a cult in a way.
A little bit, yeah. Well, and some at the base basically said like, oh yeah, they were a cult. They went by the end of the world cults. Everybody knew about them. Everybody avoided them.
They
thought they were special kind of thing.
Oh, weird. Like, yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, that's fascinating that, like, a cult could spring up in such a strange location.
Well, what really gets me is, like, it seems like everybody knew about it. To, like, the extent that, like, the higher-ups probably definitely knew about it.
Yeah, yeah. But what do you do? What do you do about a cult? I guess they should have broken them up and been like, look, you guys are stationed over here now, and you guys are breaking up the weird cult that's, you know, developed in the barracks.
Well, and I always found it weird that you could just buy, apparently they bought more than one Ouija board at the PX.
Is this like the military store or whatever?
Right. Yeah.
Why are they even selling them in the first place?
I have no idea. I think about that every time because they break one of their Ouija boards at one point and then they go get another one.
Hey,
and
it's that like, happens.
Why the heck does like the military store have Ouija board? I guess it's just technically a board game, but I still find it's like weird.
That's super weird because it's also like the 90s. So it wasn't even like, I didn't think Ouija boards were that popular back in the 90s. So it's even more strange. You know, I can't think of a, you know, I can't think of a sort of a contemporaneous type thing, but yeah, it's like, yeah, it's weird.
Well, there's even like a, I mean, the Satanic Panic was kind of in full swing at that point too, right? And I would think like the military wouldn't, like, you know, the military is typically like pretty conservative. I almost feel like.
Yeah, yeah.
They'd be like, nah, we don't need a Ouija board in RPX.
Yeah. It's like, where would you even stock that? You know, like, was it with a bunch of board games? Maybe. I don't know. That's the only explanation I can think of. And even then, it's like, it's not even, it's a fucking Ouija board, dude. Like, why would you even introduce that into the
ecosystem?
Yeah, into the ecosystem of all this. But who knows?
They were apparently, it was apparently extremely boring to be stationed in Germany at the time.
Yeah.
I guess I can understand why they sort of got enveloped in this. But I still think like there's some like just a lot of unanswered questions around it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know that we'll ever get them all answered, but, you know.
I'm almost, like, imagining this situation now because we're kind of hung up on the Ouija board at the store part where it's just, like, that was some experiment where they're like,
right,
put the Ouija boards, we'll see what happens with these guys, get the Ouija boards, and it blew up on them in Germany. It was like, oh, shit, they formed a cult. Like, all the right. other, all, and all the other bases, they just fucked around with it and then fucking, right. you know, collected dust after the first time they played around with it. But turns out in Germany, yeah, they made a cult.
Right. It is odd. I kind of go back to, like, the higher-ups knowing. And I had mentioned that someone had reported them trying to leave the base.
Yeah.
Like, basically being like, they're threatening me unless I hold on to their stuff in the States for when they arrive.
Oh, shit. Kind of
thing. So it's like, why didn't anybody take that seriously?
Yeah.
Why were they ever allowed to go?
Yeah, especially if they were known as, like, the end of the world cult. It's like, yeah.
Right.
And I presume once they went missing, then how long was it between when they took off to when they got caught?
I believe it was, like, a week.
Oh, shit. Okay. Well, I was imagining, like, 6 months.
Oh, no. They found them relatively quick.
All right.
They were in prison and, like, military prison for – they start at the naval station, and then they go to Fort Benning, and then they go to Fort Knox.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. And basically, they're – for a long time, they don't have any contact with the outside world until supposedly a CNN journalist snuck in and – got their names, and I don't know if I believe that story even.
Yeah.
How often do CNN journalists sneak into
military prisons? Yeah.
Right. Like, it, I don't think that happens. I think somehow the names got leaked, but I don't think anybody broke in. But yeah. And
weird.
Well, and another weird element, right, is that during that investigation, the national news, I think the Pensacola newspaper, the Gulf Breeze Sentinel, ABC News, blah, 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 blah. They all get this weird coded message that looks like it was printed on a teletype machine, kind of like faxed to them. And it says, like, free the Gulf Breeze 6, or we'll release the files, code, like...
Oh my
basically,
God.
Basically
what?
Implying that unless they're released, a bunch of UFO photos will
be leaked.
Be released, yeah.
Yeah. What? That's crazy.
Well, I don't think it's ever been made clear who did that. I almost think, like, because the fact that it was sent to the Gulf Breeze Sentinel and they were so, like, key in, not the Gulf Breeze. Right there? Yeah, the Gulf Breeze Sentinel. I am right. And that's so key in, like, the Ed Walters story, too. Like,
yeah.
Perpetuating the photographs. Ed Walters, in one of Ed Walters' books, he has a picture that supposedly came with the Gulf Breeze, Free the Gulf Breeze 6 packet with, like, yeah. one photo of a UFO. And I'm like, where the heck did Ed Walters get this?
That is weird, yeah.
And it makes me wonder, like, with some kind of, like, so, like, we're talking big picture.
Yeah.
But I really wonder, like, what kind of shenanigans were going down in, like, the, basically the Gulf Breeze, Pensacola, MUFON scene. Because you got Fort Eglin right there.
Yeah.
And all kinds of weirdness happens there. And I... You know, like, advanced aircraft testing, rumors of, like, non-lethal weapons testing, like...
All right, yeah. Exotic shit, yeah.
Right, yeah. And they've come up again recently, but you know, God forbid. But another little fun factoid is that Jack Brewer apparently found that the Gulfbreeze 6's old post in Augsburg got some kind of commendation the year after they had gone AWOL.
Oh, wow. Like
something that was awarded to only the best NSA listening post.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's really odd, right?
Weird.
Yeah. That's why it still kind of is like always in my head, because it's just like all these weird little details.
Right.
It feels separate from UFOs, and then there's like little things that reel it back into that. It's got military intelligence, you know, Lynn Buchanan's old stomping grounds. Like, what is going on?
Yeah. I almost wonder, because I'm letting my mind wander as we talk about this. Yeah, maybe it's like some kind of fucking like real-time training exercise or something.
Right.
Where they're like, how do we track down? What if we lose a group of rogue dudes that leave? Like, how do we track them down? Let's let the guys go, you know, or something like that. And that I mean, yeah. It's
yeah. Well, and another thing is Vance Davis claimed to work for the – he was, in fact, stationed at Fort Meade at one point, and he claimed to be part of the remote viewing program or, you know, like part of the experiments. And I can find no proof of that. I can find proof he was stationed at Fort Meade, but obviously he doesn't really come up in any of the remote viewing stuff.
Yeah.
And it does make me wonder, though, because he makes a lot of claims about being trained in Silva method, like self-mind control.
Oh,
like basically like putting yourself into an altered state to have a better memory. And it's basically like self-help kind of stuff.
Weird. Yeah.
It goes weird directions where he has like a mind palace where he talks to a blue alien that cures his flat feet. We're going in a weird direction. But this is brought up only because he would later claim on Coast to Coast that the Army and the NSA had the records of his Silva method training.
Yeah. Interesting.
I have no idea if that's true. But
well, they'd never show you anyway, Tanner. Come on.
Right, that's true.
So,
I mean, you know, when the remote viewing program's going on, I'd at least almost believe that they were like, you know, we'll get these guys that have done this weird new age course for 4 years to come join our group of analysts.
I find the whole remote viewing thing kind of fascinating, just because it burst out on the scene and then kind of went away really quickly. So it's like, okay, that's what was that all about? You know what I mean? I feel like there's more to it than, you know, than we've maybe necessarily been told. But what that more to it is, could be anything. So,
right.
So I don't want anyone to ascribe any crazy belief here, but it's there was something going on there.
I've been meaning to get into it because I'm at a stage in like, so I'm sort of going through Jacques Vallée's diaries in order and sort of writing an article just about like if I find something interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm in the section where he's basically working at SRI a lot with Hal Putoff and Russell Targ. That's like the birth of the remote viewing stuff. He's meeting Uri Geller. He's meeting Kit Green. Like, we're getting into the weirdo stuff.
Yeah, you're getting into the aviary type area, and then it all, you know, it takes off from there. That's kind of interesting how many of the players are still kind of involved after all these years.
It's both interesting and incredibly depressing, but...
this is true, yes.
But Yeah, it's there's definitely like something odd going on with just the like amount of money that was put into remote viewing.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting.
And they basically say outright, like, oh, it's pretty much entirely CIA funding, and the rest of it came from the editor of A Course in Miracles. And it's like, why is there's a joint funded CIA and Course in Miracles?
This is like
viewing study.
This is like pre Bob Bigelow. It's like found someone else who was like had the money to pony up, and they wanted answers too. Interesting.
Right. Yeah. This is probably, I think where I'm at right now is like 1973, 87.
So the government's almost like, they're kind of like if you're an eccentric billionaire or whatever, you come with us, we'll match what you put up. That's it. Right. Seems like their policy, which is good to know if I ever win the lottery.
Let me know if you need help coming up with something good to get, like, military funding for bunk science. I'd love to help out with that.
Absolutely, yeah. It would be like, look, I'll give you Department of Wildlife or whatever, like, $10 million. Let's find Bigfoot. You got to match my $10 million. Well, if it's $20 million, we can easily find Bigfoot.
Well, the Department of Wildlife knows Bigfoot is out there. They don't want us to know.
That's true.
No,
that's true. If I ever won a lottery, I'd probably have some kind of absurd, like a lobbyist firm for Bigfoot disclosure. Right. And they'd be like, oh, Jesus, come on, but all.
You know, someone's got to do it because he can't speak for himself at the present.
Exactly. So the hub for folks to find out more about you and read your stuff is TannerFBoyle.substack.com, also known as Getting Spooked. And I noticed that you've kind of made the transition a little bit into some audio stuff over at the Substack.
Right. So one of my best friends recently ended their podcast that me and some buddies had some episodes recorded for. I was given permission to release those episodes. And in the midst of that, I've just decided to kind of do some more interviews on my own, along with some like read throughs of articles just for, I know sometimes the reading experience isn't for everybody. audio is definitely like the way to go.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I could totally, it was cool. I saw the thing. I didn't listen to it, but I saw it and I'm like, oh, that's a neat idea to take these, blog posts and kind of put them all together into a presentation. So, yeah. I like it. I think it's a cool idea.
Just a little experimenting with it at this point.
Exactly. That's cool. You're having fun with it, I can tell. And that's, it comes through in what you're doing. I can tell you're really enjoying it. And I'm really enjoying reading this stuff. So it's really cool. I said to Tanner before we started the show, it's like kind of gave him forewarning. I think that's a word. Yeah, forewarning that when we have a first-time guest on, we tend to kind of do greatest hits type stuff. And we did do that tonight with the Gulf Breeze 6 and St. Peter at the Sonic Drive-Through. But this actually turned into more of a conversation than I expected because we just bounced around a lot of interesting ideas. And you're a lot of fun to chat with.
Same to you.
Oh, thanks, brother. Because I think we see things in a very similar fashion with all this. So, yeah, I really enjoyed the conversation, and folks should definitely check out your stuff. As I said, TannerFBoyle.substack.com. Just type in Tanner Boyle Getting Spooked on the Google machine, and you're also on social media, right?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram.
There you go.
Yeah.
All those places.
Come say hi.
There you go. Do you have a prediction for the fourth Planet of the Apes movie?
Oh, that's a good question.
Before we go,
I am going to assume it'll be good.
That's my, that's about my only prediction, too. I'm really thrilled that they made it. I didn't know anything about it until the Super Bowl. And then all of a sudden there's a commercial, and it's like it cut out all the anticipation because it was like now it's already made and it's coming. And it's like they made another Apes movie? This is crazy.
Yeah, that trilogy was like way beyond my expectations. Like,
oh, absolutely.
That's
yeah.
probably my favorite blockbuster of the last maybe 10 years, all three of them, I would say.
Yeah, it really holds up. And what's amazing about, yeah, because it's the first one, of course, like it was really fantastic. And it's like, mm-hmm. but they maintain the quality all the way right. through the third one. And the third one's fantastic, too. And it was really, you almost never see that. And it's right. great. They just took the time off and now they're going to come back and do, you know, hopefully a fresh trilogy.
Right.
Where you mentioned in one of the posts that you talk about the classic Planet of the Apes.
Oh yeah.
Escape the Planet of the Apes. And yeah, I'm deep into the Apes mythos. I couldn't really quote the super late or classic yeah. Apes movies, but the original one I fucking love. So I've always been a fan of the whole concept.
I am sort of a recent-ish convert. I remembered watching like the first one and Beneath on cable at one point and being like, well, I didn't like Beneath at the time. Now I definitely like it, probably more than the average person. But recently watched all of them except for the Tim Burton one.
The Tim Burton ones, yeah. That's rough.
Is it rough? That's what I assumed. So I
well, it's – yeah, because I remember being kind of like – I think I was like a high school kid or early college, and I was like super psyched because they were remaking Planet of the Apes. But what's interesting is if you look at the new trilogy, mm-hmm. the new universe or however the retelling of it, what's awesome about it is they still haven't come around to the original Planet of the Apes. It's like – and then what Tim Burton did, he just retold the original mm-hmm. version of the story. And it was like, it kind of was like, when the new ones came out, it was like, fuck that. We're going to the very beginning of how this all started. And you right. feel like, you know, when I saw the preview on Super Bowl, I was like so excited because when that third one ended, it's like, you want to get to the original movie. I want to see how this story eventually gets to the dude comes back and he realizes it's Earth and everything else.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah, I'm super excited. I would call myself an Apes head at this point.
I'm definitely an Apes head. I'm a huge, huge fan. Anyway, there you go. We threw a little pop culture in there for you at the end, folks. Maybe when the Apes movie comes out, we'll reconvene and do
that sounds good.
An Ape Down. Which is like Breakdown, but of the Apes movie.
Hopefully it'll be good to come back to that, and it doesn't disappoint either of us.
Yeah, they have a high bar to reach, but I think that they realize right. that. And I think they probably were like, look, if we do this one right, we can stretch it out for another three movies. And so, yeah, I hope so.
God, I hope so.
It seems like it's following a logical progression. So it's like,
it does.
It's, yeah. it's, you know, it's kind of like in the natural sequel. It's like, okay, now we're going to go a little bit closer to the end of, you know, to loop it all around. So,
right.
Yeah. Anyway. All right, Tanner. Thank you so much. TannerFBoyle.substack.com is the website. Check it out. I highly recommend it, folks. The stuff that he's putting out is, if you're an All America listener, you've swum in these waters for a long time, and I think you're going to really, really like his take on this stuff because it's fresh and it's original and it's thought-provoking, and it makes you look at this stuff from a different angle, which is always appreciated, especially for folks who've been looking at this for a long, long time. So thank you again, Tanner. We'll be talking again in the future, I hope, and have a good one, brother.
You too. Thanks again for having me on. It's been pretty good. Really good chat.